And I was right. The moment came, but what a shame that someone else came by. Where was I?
This is WHFR Dearborn. Coming up now, our public affairs show, the new WHFR Journal. Hello there, and welcome to another new WHFR Journal. That's right, that's the title of the show, the new WHFR Journal, because, well, every week it's new. That's right, we don't just replay that same old stuff. We are local news and views. My name is Jay Koronek. I'm the station advisor here at WHFR. Do as I do, not necessarily as I say. And the first thing we want to start with today is a lecture that was actually given on April 22nd here at Henry Ford Community College, Earthstock 009. And that's an Earth Day celebration. And on campus, I recorded, in spite of a little bit of blustery weather, I recorded the first the speech that was given, because it was an informative educational event, not just party down, springtime, rites of passage, whatever. No, it was an HFCC instructor, Judy Kelly. And so, and I have apologized, because I thought I was going to be able to get that in last week, but with Mayor O'Reilly's wonderful phone call during our 2009 Radiothon pledge and all the other stuff we had to squeeze in, this is one of those evergreen stories, as they call it. That's an Earth reference, isn't it? In other words, in the news business, a story is, well, it's still news each week, you know, and that means evergreen, as long as the recording medium holds up. So we're going to get to that right now. And so this is Judy Kelly, Henry Ford Community College instructor, speaking on Earth Day here at HFCC about water.
Here at the college. And I noticed in the audience today many familiar faces of faculty, staff, and students, and I hope to get to know all of you. I grew up in Michigan, and one of my earliest memories was trying to row a boat across a lake. My parents loved to fish, and every time we had extra time, we went to the Irish Hills and went fishing. When I was a senior in high school, the Cuyahoga River in Cleveland caught on fire, and I felt personally embarrassed that the U.S. had a river so dirty that it would catch on fire. And I remember when Lake Erie was declared dead. When I went to college, we did not have the Clean Water Act or the EPA. I was a freshman at Adrian College on the first Earth Day, and we assembled near the Carolyn, planted a tree, and had what we called in those days a teach-in. And what we're doing today is part of that legacy. It's faith in the wisdom of people. If we understand the problem, we can find the solution. Earth Day was basically a grassroots rebellion. It was the people of the United States saying, enough is enough. It caused Richard Nixon to create the EPA, regardless of what you might think of him in other ways. I was proud when the EPA was created. William Ruckelshaus was the first head of the EPA. And last night, if you watched on Channel 56, they had a whole special on poisoned water. And they had Ruckelshaus on talking about his administration of the EPA. He got the EPA to ban the pesticide DDT. His tough approach made enemies. He sued U.S. Steel and won. The nation's air and water are cleaner today because of the EPA. But there is still more work to be done. The EPA did a study in 2006 and found that almost half the lakes and rivers in the U.S. are still too polluted for fishing or swimming. Unfortunately, the Rouge River, right behind campus, is also still too polluted for fishing and swimming. I teach environmental science lab, and we went out this semester and tested the Rouge for various water quality issues. And one of the things we found was that the sewage pollution was simply out of sight. In this area, we have what are called combined sanitary and storm sewers. And so when we get a big flood, all the sewage waste finds you at this plaza. It was here in 1997 on Earth Day that a group of faculty and students proposed planting the prairie garden you see in the circular planter and the rectangular one by the stairs. Our mission was to rework the physical setting of campus to favor greater environmental harmony. Back then, the campus community had also suffered the loss of a student, Bobby Kamazar, and this prairie garden was planted in her memory. Right now, the Kingfisher Bluff project is nearing completion. How many of you know where that is? Very good. I took my Biology 131 students out there the other day. It's directly west on the backside of campus, and the trouble was there's a hairpin curve in the Rouge, and it was undercutting the bank and toppling all the trees into the river. All this sand going into the river clogs the gills of fish, and it clogs the eggs of the fish. And so it was contributing to a decline in the fish population. One exciting thing we saw yesterday was a kingfisher. A kingfisher is a bird that sits on trees near the riverbank, dives into the river to catch fish. And so they have returned from the south. Now the bluff edge has been cut back, so it's not so steep as it used to be. The parking lot has been moved away from the edge of the bluff, and the bank has been stabilized by planting trees and other vegetation. And an observation deck is under construction. Although most would believe that the biggest contributor to pollution in the Rouge is industry, industry only causes about 2%. It's individuals, you and me, who are causing most of the pollution in the Rouge. Large amounts of pollution are carried by stormwater runoff, or the water that runs over the ground during a rainstorm and directly into the Rouge. Stormwater can pick up many pollutants, such as fertilizers, pesticides, oils, various chemicals, bacteria, and animal waste. Eventually, this stormwater flows untreated through the storm sewers and into the Rouge River. So the health of the Rouge River is affected by activities within the entire watershed. The Rouge River watershed is about 438 square miles, 48 municipalities in 3 counties, and has a population of over 1.5 million people. So the college is working to restore the Rouge with the Kingfisher Bluff Project. What can you do? One thing you can do is fertilize your garden and yard plants with manure or compost instead of inorganic plant fertilizers. minimize your use of pesticides. Never apply fertilizers or pesticides near a body of water. Grow or buy organic foods, foods that are grown without herbicides and pesticides. Compost your own food waste. Do not use water fresheners in toilets. Do not flush unwanted medicines down the toilet. The environment report on WUOM had a big report this morning on all the medications that get flushed down the drains. And a lot of these medications are actually feminizing male fish. They're finding eggs where they should be finding sperm in male fish. Now, if it's doing that to fish, what's it doing to humans? We don't know. It's a giant experiment. Do not pour pesticides, paints, solvents, oils, antifreeze, or other products containing harmful chemicals into the drain or onto the ground. Now, by restoring the gardens in the plaza and the Kingfisher Bluff, we bring the theoretical in contact with the real. I see faculty members in all areas of the college having a dialogue to explore the possible ways in which classes can use the landscape as classroom. Often this is considered to be limited to biology classes. Classes could study the psychological effects that our campus has upon students, faculty, staff, and visitors, and how to address changes. Restoration processes can be used not just to restore an urban landscape, but to invigorate the community and instill ecological literacy in a campus community. Campus landscapes are important because they convey powerful messages to students and the community about humans can and should interact with the land. The character and status of campus vegetation, the relation of vegetation to the walkways, buildings, parking lots, streets, the naturalness of our campus aesthetic, all proclaim influential messages about nature's status on our campus. Students absorb these messages and carry them outward, putting them to use as they act on their environment. In their professional and personal life, in corporate boardrooms and government offices, on front lawns, our former students, influenced by our campus, will shape the landscape of the future. An ecological landscape, once established, will be less costly to maintain. Most importantly, it will foster memories, impressions, and values that we want our students to carry forth from their alma mater. Memories of a landscape that is symbiotic rather than merely symbolic. Above all, a landscape that is self-sustaining and healthy and does justice to the earth. Thank you.
Hope you enjoyed that lecture from Judy Kelly, HSCC instructor, talking about water and our needs for the future and some ideas about conservation, too, from EarthStock, as we called it, 09, Earth Day celebration right here at Henry Ford Community College. This is WHFR Journal from the station Making Waves, 89.3 FM, WHFR.FM. That's right, on the internet too. Live streaming and archive of this very show right after 2 o'clock each week. By date, you can just click on the journal button and voila, there we are. You can download it and put it in your iPod and go out jogging with it if you want to. Well, moving right along though in the show here, we have a special guest in the studio and they are all from Dearborn High School, and they are students at Dearborn High School. So let's see, one Mike who's ever going to start talking. We'll start on the on my left here. You're right? Okay, no, whatever. And introduce yourselves to us. I have a list of four names here, and I bet it's you folks, so I'll take notes here. But first of all, introduce yourself and tell us about the program you're in and the teacher at Dearborn High School that caused this all to happen. Okay, go ahead.
I'm Stephanie Theory, and I'm one of the co-directors of the WDHS student movie, Dare to be Amish. at Dearborn High, we have a video program, and we're making a feature-length film with our teacher, Kurt Doley, and a class of 25 students.
That's really exciting. Now, they do that every year for the last couple of years. Isn't that true? Continue, Kelly. Yes.
This is the 12th one.
The 12th one?
Yes.
Well, that's quite a record. So, but this is the only one that you've been involved in. Or were you there in the class last year? Is that how that class works? Can you be there a couple years in a row? Or
yeah.
The different class?
I've been in it for 2 years.
Okay. Let's move on down to our next victim there in the red. Could you talk towards that microphone? It's unidirectional, so turn the mic a little bit to point at your mouth. Yeah, be very gentle with it. Okay. And tell us your name and tell us more about the movie project, whatever you want to start. Go ahead.
My name is Kelly Skomak, and I'm...
Well, you're Kelly. Well, who's she? Stephanie?
That's Stephanie.
Okay, you're the co-directors.
We are the co-directors.
Okay, I got you now. I know where you are. Go ahead.
The movie is Dare to be Amish, and it features an Amish boy and his community, and he gets kicked out of his community because he uses devices like MP3 players secretly. And one day, a kid in his community finds him, and he's sentenced to an early rumspringa. And he gets sentenced to live with his cousin in Detroit. And he has to go to public school, and he eventually becomes a cheerleader. And it's basically about all the things he has to endure in
the real
world.
We don't want to give away the ending, do we? No.
No.
No. Surprise ending, I hope. You said he has to endure a rumdinger? No.
It's called a rumspringa. It's
rumspringa.
When the Amish kids go when they're 16 to try and live in the world of the English.
Ooh, the world of the English, yes. Does anyone speak English here, by the way? I don't. But anyway, next around, could this be Hannah?
Hannah.
Yeah. Hannah, okay. So you're on mic number 3. That's good to know here. Hannah is actually the person, folks, from Dearborn High School, student from Dearborn High, as all 4 of my guests are in the studio right now, who gets credit for the script. So tell us how that came about. Where'd you get the idea? Are you Amish yourself?
Oh, no, I'm not Amish. Not today,
okay,
no.
So I bet you did a lot of research.
I did. I did a lot of Google searching. You know, it wasn't my idea. The class pretty much comes up with it cumulatively. And basically gave me this pitch, and, you know, I made a log line out of it, and I just did a bunch of research, and, you know, I think it's pretty funny, you know.
Okay, and now this is feature length, so this is more than an hour. And
well, it's I think the script is about, it's about 60 pages, and each page is about an hour.
Yeah.
An hour and a minute, I'm sorry.
It plays back about 1 minute per page if you use the standard
format.
That's why you had to learn the official script format and everything, which really helps in production and so on. And how long when did you start writing this, and how long did it take?
Well, we started writing it in the fall, I think around September-ish, and it took about 3 months. It wasn't until, like, you know, the new year that I had, you know, the first version of it.
Wow.
So, but people, you know, in the class would read the script, and I would get opinions from the director, and, you know, from Evan here, you know, he doesn't like this line, he wants to change this line.
We'll get to Evan, he's the lead actor.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
So there was lots of revisions.
So when you said we wrote it, so you were the primary writer, but it was really a sort of a group effort. Mr. Doley made some suggestions, maybe.
Yeah, Mr. Doley helped out a lot.
Yeah. Because we've done this here, we did feature, well, not feature, but we did long film projects, like half an hour or 45 minutes in the olden days when we actually had to shoot on film. You know what film is?
Yeah.
It's plastic, you know, 30 millimeters wide. Anyway, no, we use Super 8 sound, and we found that the script, we didn't have great script, but we did original scripts and some adaptations of short stories. Don't tell Stephen King. We did one of his. Well, we didn't release it, of course, but they came out 35, 40 pages. And we found then that the casting and the planning for the shoot, the production's management side, took a couple of months. And we had only one semester, and we never finished editing it. We finished shooting it, but then it took another, like over the spring and summer, we had people come in. I mean, the class was over. I sort of like gave everybody wishful grades, you know, well, if you, I'll take that grade away if you don't come in and edit this over the summer. And so we, it takes a long time to do each stage, whether it's film or video, and you shot on video. But okay, let's go to the big star, the lead star in this, and there's many actors I know. So Evan, please introduce yourself totally. You have a hyphenated last name?
No, Fourette. Okay. Just Fourette.
There we go.
Yeah. Hey, my name's Evan Fourette, and no, it's not hyphenated.
Oh, I see. Well, what Kurt did in his email to me, he has, you play Amos Fisher.
Yeah, I do.
That's your character name. Yeah, it's not. So he's not a hyphenated era Evan. He's,
yeah.
Okay. Okay. So how did you get? Did everybody audition for different parts, and how did you get selected? Do you think?
Yeah. We had a couple people that we were thinking about doing the part, but really it came down to. Actually, Tom LaDuke made me raise my hand, and and I said, you know, I'm going to go for it, and I'm happy I did, because I probably would have regret not doing it. That's been really, really fun.
Well, it's a great opportunity to test yourself. You know, even when people come here to Henry Ford Community College, it's the first 2 years of a program. You can take some classes in a major area that you think you want to get a degree in or something later, but it's a time to explore. You know, there might be some subject area that you never really got into before, and you find, whoa, I got an aptitude, or this is cooler than I thought, you know, and so it's worthwhile taking the challenge, and so I bet you had a lot of lines to memorize, huh?
Oh, yeah, a whole script, but
Did they go to the trouble of using cue cards for prompting at all?
Actually,
I mean, that's not bad. I've seen it in professional productions at all levels. It's just that the professionals never have to look. But just in case, you know, it's kind of cool. Especially on TV soap operas, they always have the cue cards.
Oh, yeah.
Even though I've been on set with a couple of those. But people, I mean, if you're really good, you shouldn't have to look, because that's a problem. But so you were in most every scene, I bet.
Yeah, practically every scene, I think. Besides four. I think there was four scenes I'm not in, which it was fun. I mean, I love this movie to death.
Yeah.
And it's been so much fun working with everybody on it. So much great support, too.
Okay. Well, now that we've introduced Stephanie, Kelly, Stephanie, Kelly, Hannah, and Evan here, we need to tell you folks that this is going to premiere next week. It's next Thursday at 7 p.m. at the Michael A. Guido Theater and the beautiful Ford Community and Performing Arts Center right here in Dearborn. It says in this article, tickets are still available for screening. Is that still true as of today?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You'll have tickets up until the premiere.
Okay, so you
until they sell out.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, obviously, but the auditorium holds how many? It's big, isn't it? 1,200. Yeah. So, we want everybody to go there, support the program, support. We'll talk about cost and production problems next, but this will be a lot of fun, and I'm hoping. Didn't bring any tickets with you to sell, did you?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
Oh,
we did.
I'll buy one. Okay. just hang on afterwards here, So it's going to start probably 7 or 7:10 as soon as people get in their seats, and go about an hour plus, depending on the final cut, right? Are they still editing?
We're editors? Still editing.
Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah.
Well, you know.
It's no longer than, like, an hour, maybe? Maybe an hour.
It's maybe an hour and a half.
Oh, God.
At the longest.
There's a little difference of 30 minutes.
Yeah.
There,
so. Well.
You could run a blooper reel afterwards. I bet that would be hilarious, too. But that takes time to edit on top of it. Well, that's totally understandable, though, because, one principle in editing is, you know, you want the best possible project. There's always a lot of choices. And the final deadline, well, that's when you have to have it done. But until then, if you can make it better, you should. I mean, as long as you can stay awake that long, you know. because, you know, professionally, it's a matter of your reputation on the project, you know, and getting hired again. So if you think you can really make it better, and maybe sometimes you can't, but if you can make it better, then you need to keep working until the final moment, when it's just got to go to the next stage, either viewing or distribution team or making DVDs or whatever. Have you folks ever in the past made DVDs, made a copy for people that would want it later that missed the movie?
Yeah, we'll have DVDs for sale, not at the premiere, but within...
You could take an order or something.
Yeah. We'll be taking, you know...
Oh, that'd be little, cool. Yeah, I didn't see that for the past. I mean, I didn't see that as an option somewhere, but that would be cool. So the 12th production of Dearborn High School's feature film, 60 minutes plus, makes it a feature, so even if they don't use the extra 30... it's still a feature at 60 Minutes, remember. Dare to be Amish, and it is next Thursday, May 7th. Now, just let we've got a couple more minutes here to talk about this. So either Kelly or Stephanie, what was the most difficult part about the actual production? I mean, finding the locations or you were shooting on and off really for quite a long time. Sometimes, I mean, Hollywood, if they're all like in one city like Dearborn, they would just try to clear the decks and everybody worked themselves to death for 2 or 3 weeks in a row. So so it looks like Kelly wants to talk.
Definitely organization was the hardest part of this production. All our actors were amazing and very supportive. It's just getting everyone together, especially one of the scenes has over 100 people in it. So it's hard to get everyone coordinated, everyone being able to come that specific day. Getting locations, pretty much every organizational aspect.
Professionally, so I mean the scheduling too, was this outside of school time or during school time or both?
Both.
To shoot
every
it?
Pretty much our entire year or senior year has been this movie.
But you couldn't start until January when the script was done, or were you already in pre-planning while the script was getting its final version?
After Hannah finished writing the first scene, we started shooting.
So that was pretty quick.
In October, we started shooting.
Oh, in October. Yes. So you didn't know how it was going to end, but you started shooting the first scene.
Yeah.
Basically, that's what happens every year.
Now, I just, you know, I happen to know a little bit about literature as a former professor here in English. That was before I became a telecom instructor many years ago. Is that many great novels were written that way, especially Charles Dickens. He wrote a chapter or so each week, and it was in a newspaper. You know, every day, and he didn't know how it was going to end. He probably did in the back of his head somehow. And his novels are always like, oh, so well plotted and so well organized. Now, he may have had an outline, it's true, but he actually didn't finish writing it until he finished writing it. It was only one draft because each, you know, as soon as he was done each day, that little column had to go in the newspaper. So there was another chapter. And many other great novelists, for example, Kurt Vonnegut, if you heard of him.
So, yeah.
You know, Slaughterhouse-Five, Cat's Cradle, contemporary novelist, just passed away last year, unfortunately, sadly. But he believed in that, too. He just sit down and start writing, see where the story goes. And if you get into trouble, you know, he wouldn't know where to go. He'd just write himself out of it. Just the pressure to, I got to tie up all these loose ends. I got to do it somehow. And so it just, when you get yourself into a hole, you got to dig, you know, crawl back out of the hole, I guess. And that's a little scary, but it all depends how creative people work. Now, in film, because there's usually a budget issue, you got to work highly organized and efficiently. What about the budget? Was that Stephanie's responsibility or Mr. Doley's?
Well, with the budget, it's sort of the Dearborn Cable Communications Fund donates a lot of money. That really helps us out.
That's
getting
good.
The equipment.
I didn't know they were still in existence, but that's wonderful.
Yes, they help us out every year very much.
And well, that's a reason to be, all right. Mm-hmm.
And donations.
What kind of cost did you need? I mean, you had the cameras, right, already, and you had the editing equipment, and I bet the actors work for nothing. Or did Evan hold out for a big chunk of the royalties or something?
Yeah, or something like that.
Well, we got a new lens just for this movie that other people can also use, but it's an adapter for our cameras that makes it look like film style.
Oh, okay.
And also all of the props and costumes were a lot of the budget with getting authentic Amish clothes.
Yeah, it's not contemporary Dearborn costuming, certainly, right? For those scenes that were set in the Amish community. And let's talk here, maybe back to Kelly. How good really was Mayor O'Reilly in his part? Because he was one of the Amish, I understand. I talked to him last Friday here on the show.
He was excellent. He did a great job. We rehearsed it with him once, and he already knew all the lines. We had sent him the script ahead of time, and he already knew all the lines when he got there.
Yeah, well, you know, he was in film many years ago in Detroit mm-hmm. as an actor, I understand, and started out one of his early jobs, and he still loves it, which is a good thing because film is becoming big in Michigan now with the state. As long as the state keeps having the great tax credit, I'm sorry to say, the reality is, and I've said this on the show, if the state can't afford the 45% rebate tax credit to these film studios, they're going to just pick up and leave. So that's the reason they're here, not that Michigan has such great weather, for example. And that's why they're building indoor studios as fast as they can in Allen Park and maybe Pontiac, too. Because if you can't trust the weather, well, you just you go indoors, you know, if the set is big enough. But it's that they wouldn't come here because although we do have a great variety of different land in Michigan. I mean, we got sand dunes, we got some mountains further north, and you know, we got water, lakes, and so we really have an amazing situation. It's just the outdoor weather can't be counted on. But in a major production, they schedule, as you may know about production scheduling, to shoot all the outdoor scenes first. I don't know if you did this necessarily, because if you have a day of bad weather, well, you can just go indoors, you know, that's your backup plan, is don't waste that day. If everybody's available, you just go indoors. And let me tell you, they have whole classes about production scheduling in college. I mean, a whole semester, nothing but how to schedule it to save the most money and get it done as quick as possible and have backup plans, you know, like Mayor O'Reilly was, you know, he's a busy man, he made some time available, but something might have come up, you know, and you had to be gone, and that would change your whole production schedule for that scene, unless you just wanted to write out the mayor, and I don't think you want to write the mayor out of the thing after he volunteered. So that's often true in Hollywood. They get a big cameo actor, and they can only be there one day, and then all of a sudden, no, it's got to be the next day. Well, they got to change the whole movie around because they want the big name, even if it's only one day. And then some actors, Evan wasn't this precious, but I want all my scenes in the first 2 weeks, and you can shoot whatever else you want to for the last 6 weeks of this feature, but I want to be in and out in 2 weeks. And if they're the star, they've got the money for the production, that's what you do. And it's crazy, you know. Let's see, about the, is it Amish or Amish?
It's Amish.
Hannah, Hannah.
Oh, it's Hannah, yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm saying there's alternate ways. It's Amish.
Yeah, it's Amish. Amish.
Not Amish.
No.
Okay, Amish. We'll try to remember that. Amish. And did you base this on any, I mean, you got the idea from where? From television or from?
Okay.
Is there an Amish person at Dearborn High School?
Oh, no, I wish, though. I really wish. I based it off of a lot of the teen movies that I saw, like, growing up, like, Bring It On and stuff, and mm-hmm. except I made it way more, like, dramatic, and, you know, there's an Amish kid in it, and there's no Amish kid in Bring It On, so.
Right. Okay. And Evan, have you seen any of those bad made-for-TV movies about the Amish?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Definitely. I did so much research on my own.
So you're trying to keep it authentic, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of ironic that the Amish kid is the most normal one in the entire movie, but yet he's Amish. So mm-hmm. it's definitely the irony of it. It's very funny. I my character's kind of the reasoning of the movie, the white at the end of the tunnel. So
And don't talk about the end of the tunnel yet. But
yeah, everyone's okay. Completely insane in this movie, and I love it.
Okay, folks, the cost, again, we'll do sort of my summary question here in a second. The cost, again, is only $5 a person. Is that correct?
Yes.
Oh, boy. And they can be purchased either at Dearborn High School, the tickets for this performance, or at the door. And it is a 1,200-seat auditorium, but there's you know, there's a lot of people and family from just the cast and crew, those 100 people in the scene. Maybe the mayor wants to come and see it if he's in town. And I want to be there, too. Think about it. Put it on your schedule, folks. Next Thursday, 7 p.m. at the beautiful Ford Community and Performing Arts Center main auditorium. Hey, no little dink multi-purpose room for you guys, right? The main auditorium. And it's going to be very exciting. And if you miss it, you might be able to just contact the high school, Mr. Dolley, that's D-O-E-L-L-E, and maybe see about getting a DVD, which would also benefit the program, too. I'm sure that's going to be reasonably priced. and this is going to be exciting. I'd just like to go down, go around last and ask each of you, if you are a senior or even if you're a junior, some of you, is anyone a junior here? No, you're all seniors. You're big time. That's why you got the leading prize. You're a sophomore.
Yeah.
Great, Evan. Okay. Well, we'll start with the wishes and hopes for the future. Now, I always tell people in telecom that the skills are totally applicable to all of the great jobs and careers anyway. Whatever you learn from this, whether it's organization or budgeting or acting. Mayor O'Reilly, okay, acting,
yeah,
okay. Become a mayor in the future, Evan.
Yeah.
But what were you thinking of more specifically, Stephanie?
Well, in the future.
For the future, yeah.
I would definitely like to go into film and perhaps even direct, maybe produce something behind the camera is what I'm really into.
Got that taste in her mouth. Okay, Stephanie?
Kelly,
I'm sorry. We just did Stephanie. This is Kelly, yeah.
I would also like to go into film. This year has made me question that a little bit, but I definitely still would. I love making movies.
Well, as I said, the typical jobs like directing feature films are few and far between. Okay,
that's
tough. Of course, at the Sundance Film Festival, and you might have heard about that. That's every year. It's Robert Redford Sundance Institute. That's where they have a lot of first features from people in the U.S., and they've opened it up to people around the world, too. Now, darn, that's going to have another 10 million entries. But right this last year, 8,000 people submitted feature films for Sundance. And only a couple hundred got selected because they only have so many theaters to show them in during the week or 6 days that happens every January out there. Nothing ventured, nothing gained. If you really enjoy it and love it and try to do it, and other people may be able to notice your enthusiasm and your fresh approach or different spin on things, and it's worthwhile going for that. And you learn a lot of things as we try to tell people in telecom anyway. And personally, I think the future, I think Russ Gibb would have said this. A lot of you have met Russ, the legend.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. He's a man too, but he liked to be referred to as the legend, I think. Hi, Russ. Are you listening out there? Anyway, that media literacy, that is how to use the media, whether it's radio, TV, the internet, Facebook, Twitter, all these things you have to have the appropriate use of and shape your skills in a variety of ways to be successful. And I think everybody needs to know that for the future. And almost all jobs and careers will somehow contact with a website or email or voicemail or audio and video productions, even if they're just little clips here and there, you know, internet, iTunes, whatever. So that's great. Hannah, writing, you want to write more or you thought twice about it after those 60 pages?
No, I do like writing. I think that's really my first love is screenwriting. But, you know, whatever is in the business, I will do. It's to start out with, you know, if it's being a gopher, I got to work my way up.
Okay. don't let anybody exploit you. No. Okay.
That won't happen.
But it's true. You have to give of yourself a lot in these telecom careers to prove yourself, but don't get stuck in a, you know, sort of a dead-end job. Keep always applying and looking at other options.
Definitely.
It's not where, of course, it hasn't been like for quite a few years where you can get in a job and stay in that same job at that same company all your life. That's not going to happen. It hasn't been that way for several years. And in telecom, it's always been the fact that every year or two, at least, even if you feel secure for a while, start looking for a better job somewhere else. Even if you love the people you're with, there may not be the chance to jump ahead there as your skills or your interest goes. So got to stay sort of flexible and also always keep learning. You know, that even here at Henry Ford Community College, yeah, we have people out of high school, and maybe you'll consider to get started here in our telecom program. Little pitch, sorry. if you've got a scholarship to a big school somewhere, that could be good, too. Go visit first, of course. And last but not least, Evan, you're still a couple years away, so you can just float for a while before you make a big decision. What do you think about now? Now, you hadn't thought about acting before.
No.
But what'd you have in mind before, and what about now?
I've always been into set design. So I've always wanted to do set design when I got older.
Really? Okay.
Mm-hmm. You know, with this acting, I've been thinking about directing because now I know how I like to be directed. And it really helps to be an actor to begin with, so you know what to say and how to say it to an actor to get them to do what you need them to do.
Right. That's how you need to know a little taste of all the actual skills involved in media, so that you can appreciate them even if you're not doing them. Like you become a big time producer. That's even better than being a writer, because the producer hires you and they make a bigger chunk of the profits too, Hannah.
That's true.
But then you can appreciate and work with the team better, if you know what I'm saying. But I should comment that I think production design overall, that is choosing all these details, actors, casting is kind of part of it. But I mean, that's so important, and it's now becoming one of those credits that are up front in the movie after, you know, producer, director, editors, and the big stars. Production design is usually there, and rightly so. It used to be called art director, but it's really a major pre-production and continued job throughout. So if you've got a great art background, then production design is quite appropriate. Well, I want to thank all of our guests for coming in now. We're going to move on to other things at the new WHFR Journal for the last half of our hour. Whoops, the last, I only got 22 minutes. Got to go quick here. But thank you for coming by. Really appreciate it. And everybody, final word here, May 7th, 7 p.m., next Thursday night at the Michael A. Guido Theater, Ford Community and Performing Arts Center, for the premiere of Dare to Be Amish. So thank you, everybody. It was great having you here.
Thank you.
We'll be right back after these messages.
Joe Perry
and Steven Tyler from Aerosmith, here for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Yeah, you know we love it when the music does the talking.
And you know, the music stops when someone gets killed.
So never, 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 never let someone you know get behind the wheel if they've been drinking.
And they don't have to be plastered to kill someone or themselves. Even one or two drinks can impair your judgment and change your life forever.
So keep it real, keep it real. Friends, don't let friends drive drunk. Here's more than your eye.
Public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Patty Duke. Like millions of other baby boomers, I like spending my free time with my grandchildren, just relaxing with a good book, traveling, and I love the convenience of doing things online. Social Security has made applying for retirement benefits online easier than ever before. So when you decide to retire, apply online for Social Security benefits at www.socialsecurity.gov. It's so easy.
Just helping our Dearborn High School students find the outdoor and letting them know how much I appreciate their coming over here, leaving behind their busy schedule at Dearborn High School, and they're still editing. They're still editing the film. And joining me in the studio is my co-host for today, Susan Morrell. Hello, Susan.
Hello. Happy May 1st, May Day here.
It's a
beautiful day here in Michigan. It's in the 60s, and the sun is shining, which is a good thing.
I wanted to mention what May Day is in the world.
What is it?
All except the United States, May Day is Workers' Day.
Hey, we're working.
Of course, we have this Labor Day thing, which might be thought of for workers. I always think it's a day when you're supposed to work. You have to do labor on Labor Day. But no, it's anti-Labor Day because it's a holiday and people, except for a few, don't have to work here. But no, it's Workers' Day, but it got a bad reputation, May Day, as being communist-inspired. You know, unions and communism and all that. And so the United States, we had to come up with our own concept for May Day. And what the heck is it?
Well, unions are okay in the United States, aren't they? I thought they were.
Well, now I got to Google it. I'm sorry. I don't even remember because I don't support the idea of
what?
May Day in the U.S., so I've forgotten exactly what the heck it is. Okay. according to Wikipedia, and we know that that's just written by average people, folks, and in fact, there is a footnote on this. It says the neutrality of this article is disputed. Okay, refers to the Haymarket affair of any of several public holidays. In many countries, May Day is synonymous with International Workers' Day, IWWD, or Labor Day, LABOUR, not ours, which celebrates the social and economic achievements of the labor movement. As a day of celebration, the holiday has ancient origins, and it can relate to many customs that have survived into modern times. Okay, and traditional celebrations, the Celtic festival of Beltane and the Germanic festival of Walpurgis Night. Now, who knows what those are? I don't know. May Day falls exactly half of a year from November 1st, another cross-quarter day, which is also associated with various European pagan and neo-pagan festivals, such as Samhain. See, all the stuff that you don't know unless you read Wikipedia,
right,
which
but
is in dispute because of its bias probably towards non-U.S. celebrations. Even though they're Americans here. Okay, let's go to America. Early European settlers here in the American continent and in some part of the United States, May baskets are made. We've heard of that. Okay. These baskets are small and usually filled with flowers or treats and left at someone's doorstep before they're stolen. The basket today, the basket giver would ring the bell and run away. That's cool, but and I think I vaguely remember this when I was growing up in the 50s, but nobody did it for me, certainly. The person receiving the basket would try to catch the fleeing gift giver. If they caught the person, a kiss was to be exchanged. Scary, huh?
Well, I don't think anybody's really doing that around here. And as far as International Labor Day, thousands of people are getting laid off in the United States, so I don't think anybody's doing much celebration for May Day here in the U.S. of A.
Right. As it says here, May 1st commemorates the fight for the eight-hour day, too, internationally.
Which is not being observed everywhere, needless to say.
No, I like the concept of flex time, but that can work out even more.
Jay has flex time on his job.
And, some places, now I think May Day, some places in the U.S., even in some schools, they set up a maypole for peace. And that they have all these colored ribbons coming down from the top, and the kids dance around it holding a ribbon, and it all entwines or wraps around in this sort of pattern or knitted pattern around the pole. I remember last year there was actually a couple of elementary schools in Dearborn that actually, we had pictures a week or two later in the paper of this peace pole. And of course we still have two big wars that we're personally involved in as a country.
Yes.
And so peace was still something to be hoped for.
And believe it or not, Barack Obama has no time to deal with the wars because of all the problems, economic problems here in the USA. And he just gave a fabulous speech to the American people on Wednesday evening and addressed how he's been doing in the past 100 days, and everybody rated him, right?
Right, yeah.
And so I guess I'm going to get an opportunity to rate him here on WHFR.
Yeah, let me just finish the point. I just remembered it is officially called Law Day in the U.S.
Oh, Law Day.
That we love laws.
Yeah, don't we, though?
And maybe in the Obama administration, we might even follow some.
maybe
as a,
we will.
As a government, you know. Things like no torture.
Right.
That used to be a law, you know, and no unjustifiable arrests without right of legal counsel. You know, there's still a Patriot Act there, folks, that is not patriotic at all, goes against all of our traditions, breaks all of our laws. So I think it'd be wonderful on Law Day if we got rid of the Patriot Act. And you say, oh, well, he's not a patriot. Yes, I am. But the Patriot Act, they can name laws different things. It doesn't mean that's what the law is about. And, I don't want to be arrested in the middle of the night for something I said on this show.
Neither do I.
And taken to, or something else that I didn't even do.
Hello.
And taken to prison and have no right of defense because they think I'm who knows what. You wouldn't want it either, would you, gentle listener? No. And that's what the Patriot Act, that's how bad that is legally. So in Law Day, let's hope we do have rule of law and get back to it a little more than in the previous administration. So that's my hope for Obama in his next 900 days or whatever he has left.
Only 900 left. But no, he made a great speech on Wednesday evening. It was an addressed press conference, and all the press was there, and they asked great questions. And I have to give Obama an A for effort in terms of handling press conferences since he's been in the White House. He's a great communicator. He thinks very, very well on his feet. He's obviously a cool guy, and he has enchanted, really, the country with his expertise. I mean, he's a very, very smart man, and he's very thoughtful on his feet when he's asked questions by the press. So he definitely gets an A for effort, an A for handling press conferences, and I think his heart is in the right place. He's trying to do the best for the country, and he's hit the ground running with his entire staff. But I don't agree with the bailout culture, of course, and some of the people surrounding him I don't have that much confidence in. For example, Timothy Geithner, he's a Wall Street fellow, and he's part of the Wall Street crowd, and he's just handing out money hand over fist. And I don't think that his agenda is really going to solve these problems. I think these banks should have been nationalized. That would have been a better solution, and it would cost less for the U.S. taxpayer. But Obama is supporting his choices, and he's letting them solve some of the problems, and he's just putting an okay there. But this may turn into a headache for him down the road.
Okay, now you didn't ask me for my rating. First of all, we know that grading is artificial. As a good teacher, you know that there has to be criteria in a class. People expect grades on their report cards and on their college transcripts, and it does mean something in our society. But it's a very specific, limited context. Because you give a student an A means they fulfilled specific guidelines that were already established when they came in. And it doesn't mean that they're really a great person or not. It just means that within that very specific context, they happen to meet the requirements for that high grade. And some people would say, or in the past have said, well, an A means you're smarter than the teacher. Well, no. An A would be maybe 100% of everything the teacher asked of you. Although, wouldn't that just be satisfactory? I mean, shouldn't every student aspire to achieve 100%? Well, some people can't do that. Well, anyway, getting back to my grade of Obama, and I'd give him an A. But what are my specific criteria?
Right.
Okay, I grade him compared to the previous administration. And
there
there's no doubt in all the initiatives that he has begun, I mean, his love of science and research and staying cool, not just cool in a metaphoric sense, but staying calm and yet taking action. Maybe some people agree, like peace activists, we've still got war. We need to stop that right away. And your point about if you're going to nationalize, if you're going to work with the banks, you better just nationalize them. They're not going to get better. My feeling, too, if you're going to do something about health care, you better go to single-payer health care and quick. That's the only way to save money in the long run and bring more jobs about for people and keep us healthier. But the ecology, oh, you know, was George Bush green at all? No, you know, only when he got sick from a Japanese meal. Oh, that was his dad. I'm sorry, who went to Japan after he was out of the presidency and didn't have a good time after a formal meal. Anyway, so by comparison, we have taken initiatives to go in exactly the right direction. Whether or not we'll wind up in the right place, whether or not we've done enough fast enough, whether or not we can ever pay off the debt of all of this, the bailout monies that we spent, because somebody's got to pay, right? Or we'll get stuck with inflation. You know, our money will be worth less if it doesn't mean anything anymore. And I don't want to go into other specifics or details because, you know, he's only getting started. But if we got to play the number game, the grading game that all the commercial media do, you might say, just compared to the previous president, he's got to get an A. He's got to get an A in all the things I mentioned. We're so far in the right directions. Whether or not we'll get there, whether or not we'll survive after we get there, you know, who knows? But if we all work together on this and stay calm, doesn't mean we have to totally support the president. And often on this show, we won't be supporting, well, even our local officials necessarily. It's alternative views. That's what I promise. And we hope that you continue thinking and working through these issues for yourself, too.
But in terms of media trivia, I have to say, yes, Obama does get an A for looking cool. He looks very cool. All the photo ops with the family, very cool. The new dog, Bo, very cool. The dog looks great with Obama running around, and their energy level is matched. And the dog is just a puppy. So it's a good thing that Obama is a young man and he's got a lot of energy, because he's going to need every single ounce of it for the challenges ahead, and he recognizes that.
So with 7 minutes to go before Highway 61 Blues show, where did you want to go next? We have a rather depressing article here from a U of M.D. professor.
Well, yeah, we've kind of covered that. You know, okay. I think that Obama has... Yes. Spoke the other night about the economy and, you know, the challenges and, you know, of course, the banking issue. Yes, you know, the whole issue with the banks and that the problem is we've given them already so much money and they haven't resolved their issues.
Let's say for the sake of balance, why don't you feature the Ron Paul letter, at least paraphrase it. Ron Paul, of course, was a Republican candidate for the nomination of the Republican Party. Before that, he had run as a Libertarian in the 90s as their presidential nominee, but then he turned Republican because he needed a consistent platform and a way to get reelected. But he has consistently voted, I think, Libertarian. Well, here's something that he came up with, a bill that he has in Congress that he sent out to his email list today, and I think even progressives, Mike, I think everybody would go for it. So why don't you tell us about that?
Yes, this is from Ron Paul for Congress.com, and you can access this on the internet yourself. And he has proposed something called the H.R. 1207 bill, and this will audit the Federal Reserve, and it currently has 110 co-sponsors in the House of Representatives, and Ron Paul says this is the most important piece of legislation in his career, and this H.R. 1207 will open up the Fed's funding facilities, such as the Primary Dealer Credit Facility, the Term Securities Lending Facility, and the Term Asset-Backed Securities Lending Facility to congressional oversight. Well, that would help, since we've never heard of these facilities, and the public knows virtually nothing about them. These audits would include discount window operations, open market operations, and agreements with foreign bank central banks, such as the ongoing dollar swap operations with European central banks. And this would be a great thing for the American public to know what is going on with the Fed.
As he mentions in there, right now the Federal Reserve is the only government office administrative function. It has no audit whatsoever.
Right.
Nobody ever has to come in and look at it. Believe me, I don't know any business that could be legal, even like Henry Ford Community College. We have an auditor team that comes here every year for a couple of months. I mean, it's a public institution, for gosh sakes. They don't have to be audited. They can go crazy on their own. Maybe these things would happen. So I think Ron Paul is on track with what a lot of people are thinking, is that if we're going to, now he's actually in favor of ending the Federal Reserve. I mean, that's what he would prefer. But as long as it's going to exist, let's get it responsible by setting up a system of audit. And so I hope a lot more. Let's see, how many House Representatives? 325? I forget the exact number. So 110 is not even a third, probably, or close to a third. Needs a lot more support. And of course, since the Democrats are in Congress and he's a Republican, even if some of these other people are Democrats, it doesn't have much hope, I think. If Nancy Pelosi doesn't think it's part of the Democratic agenda, or it might make, you know, an audit might make Obama look bad somehow, and I don't think it would. Take the political surveys. People want the government to be accountable, at least. If not, to not bail out people without any strings attached, too, which sort of bothered me. But Bush started that, and so it was a bad example to set. Now we have strings attached, and they are pulling the strings now, which some people don't like. But if you're going to go bankrupt and you're going to ask for government money, absolutely, you're going to expect the government is going to have some strings there. Now, the nice thing about Obama, too, I'll just finish with this comment, is that, as he said about the Chrysler bailout, the government doesn't want to be in the car business.
Right.
That it hopefully this can be temporary, and hopefully we won't lose any money on it, too. If we bail them out, hopefully they'll spring back, maybe not as quick as 1979 when Chrysler was bailed out, a different company then, folks, but bailed out by the federal government. And Lee Iacocca was in charge of the company then and asking for the bailout. And boy, he got the U.S. government loan paid off and made a profit there. So
yes, and let me just say one final word about the Fed, is that U.S. taxpayers, the hundreds and billions of dollars of taxpayer bailouts on Wall Street have come from the Fed, and it's now to the point of $3 trillion. So it's very serious. As far as the Chrysler bailout, there is a group of Chrysler secured lenders, and they're Wall Street people, and they want their money. And they're going to go to bankruptcy court, and they're complaining that the administration has skirted bankruptcy laws by forcing them to take a larger loss on their debt than on the other stakeholders.
Right, Obama sort
that's
of...
That's debatable.
He told them off over the air. Actually, one of them that's in that article, they at 6 p.m. last night, they recounted and said, oh, we'll settle. But they already had their names sullied by the president. Some of the big banks did go along with it because they already were bailed out by the government. But some of these small hedge funds and other sort of, they call them boutique investment banks, they were holding out. Number one, they didn't have any government money, so no strings attached to them. They wanted more. And if some of them are still holding out, when they go in front of a judge, probably next week, he's going to rule on whether or not they deserve more than everybody else. But it doesn't seem too positive, and I agree with Obama that everybody, if you're going to make this, keep Chrysler in existence, everybody's got to give up something. I want to commend the Canadian government. They're paying $1 out of $3 on this bailout, at least a certain portion of it anyway, because they've got Chrysler factories, and as we know, they make a lot of the Chrysler models that we drive in the U.S. in Canada. They got a lot of workers involved, so they're doing their part too. Canada's aware of the consequences for them, and everybody's trying to hope that we can keep a level playing field and keep everything going for all the people, all the workers that are involved. So on May 1st, Labor Day, I certainly hope that UAW compromised their pension program and so on, and they just want to try to keep things going, and maybe with new ideas from Fiat or the government and you know, a little bit more government interference for another couple of years, they can get back on track. We don't have much to say about GM yet. We just know they have a plan, and it's going to cut them down in size and so on. We can't make comments about that.
But I'm happy about Fiat coming and joining with Chrysler.
Our only time for one last story. It's now 2 o'clock, folks. It's WHFR Dearborn, and we're waiting for Joanne Kruczynska to arrive for Highway 61. We may just continue talking about a couple stories until we see her come in. As the students from Dearborn High School indicated, and they arrived later than they wanted to be here for this show, the traffic and the of both our north and south entrances, you might say, Evergreen Road and Ford Road into the college and throughout Dearborn, all this construction is a mess today.
Oh, it's terrible.
And delaying people who thought they'd just have a 3-minute drive in, and it's 15, 20 minutes to try to get through the detours. So we're going to keep broadcasting until Joanne gets here, even though the archive is going to run out in a minute.
But right.
One last important story that you need to hear even on the archive. What to do about the swine flu? Oh, excuse me. It's not called that anymore.
Well, this is from the Department of Public Health of Wayne County, and this is a public health fact sheet on the swine influenza. It's called, the scientific name is influenza A, the letter A in the alphabet, and its scientific name H1N1. And anyone